Hi, this is Megan Lynch from sixpointcreative.com, and you're listening to EA Interviews.
EA Interviews, episode 314.
Inspiration, transformation, success stories, and the imperfect action round. 7 days a week. Join Mario Ficini for today's Expert Authority Effect interview.
You've been at a growth plateau in your business. Have you wanted to maybe change things up, perhaps rebrand, and you're just not sure what to do? You don't want to make the typical mistakes that most companies do when they are doing a rebrand? I know I've thought about it, and that's why I'm excited to have Megan Lynch on today's episode. And we're going to be talking about all of this and more right after we thank our sponsor. So you've got your book mostly written, but now what? Visit GetMyBusinessBookPublished.com today to learn how you can publish and promote your nonfiction lead and profit-generating business book in 8 weeks. Once again, that's GetMyBusinessBookPublished.com. Here she is, ladies and gentlemen, Megan Lynch. Megan, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great today. Thanks so much for having me on, Mario.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I can't wait to dive into this because it's such a topic that is relevant to all businesses. If they're at a growth plateau, what do you do? And if you're considering a rebrand, let me just start off by asking, what are some of the mistakes that most companies make that you shouldn't?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big things, mistake number one is assuming that you need a rebrand from the get-go, assuming that a rebrand will solve all your problems. I think sometimes people are trying to solve other problems and just think like, oh, you know, we don't have a strategic marketing plan, or we don't have a strong reputation, and so we're going to kind of update our logo and fix everything. So I'd say that's number one. And then I think number two is really also equating a rebrand with, let's say, like a logo update or a website refresh, and not really thinking about it as something more holistic about really redefining what the future of your company is and redefining what that conversation that you want people to be having about your company is.
So what I'm hearing is they're treating it like it's piecemeal, like the website's one thing, the logo's another, the whatever's the next thing, when really they should be looking at the brand strategy and saying, how can we make all this synergistic?
Yeah, I think that there's that. And there's also this piece of figuring out kind of what the vision is for the future of the company. Like, what do you want the story of this company to be? What do you want people to be saying about this company? What do you want the reputation to be? And then basically marshal everything that you're doing in your marketing, on your website, you know, with your different assets like a logo and things, marshal it all towards that vision and kind of use that as the North Star. And I think sometimes people are like, oh, our logo's outdated, we need to update it. But you know, sometimes for a company that, you know, we work with a lot of family owned companies, and sometimes changing your logo is exactly what you don't want to do. You know, you have equity in that asset, and sometimes making it look trendy or something could actually take you a step further away from your vision instead of a step towards it.
So what you're saying is I can't just go out and buy a new suit and think that I'm going to be a better person.
That's a big piece of it. Yes, exactly. Unfortunately.
And that is unfortunate, because who wouldn't want to buy a new suit or maybe a new bag or some shoes or something? But I'm glad you're bringing this up, because it sounds like at the core of it, you have to get to the core of it, because the rest is just niceties which may or may not help you or not.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that often if you're kind of jumping to the solution, we kind of, as humans, we just kind of have a bias towards action. So it's like, ooh, I need to fix this thing. Let's just, you know, call a designer, get a logo. I like the look of that. Let's do something like that. And we don't often like to hear that, yeah, that sometimes it's kind of, you have to take a couple steps back before you can make a move like that effectively and get a return on it.
But the Joneses just got a new logo. Why can't we?
Exactly.
What would you say someone should start with if they're seriously considering a logo or website? Or let me do this as a two-parter. If they're seriously considering a new brand strategy and they go, I want to do it the right way, we're doing this long-term, we got the vision, we're going to map out a 5-year to 10-year game plan. Okay, cool. Now, if someone's just impulsive and they just want to keep up with the Joneses, and, you know, I think the answer is the same for both. So what would you say is the first place to start, whether you're doing it impulsively just just because, or you really want, excuse me, sorry. And I had water too. That's what's annoying. Like I prepped Steve and Nick. Appreciate you cutting that out. Joneses. So whether they're starting as a long-term the right way or they're doing it short-term, what would you say is the first thing they should start with to make sure they're laying that strong foundation?
I mean, I think number one is really having a very strong focus and understanding what that focus is going to be. I think that too often, you know, and I think that this is both like the blessing and the curse of being an entrepreneur, right? Is like you see opportunity everywhere. You want to be everything to everyone. And I think a lot of what your work is about is kind of like, no, you don't want to be everything to everybody. You want to be highly meaningful and highly relevant to a few people who really truly need what you do and what you're putting out into the world. And I think that that's true regardless of what kind of business you're in. You know, the complexion of it changes whether you're manufacturing a product or whether you are, you know, putting out your expertise. But, you know, really, truly knowing your audience and knowing your focus and knowing your value and then really bringing everything to amplify that is, that's, I would say, probably like 80% of the issue is people don't spend the time up front to really truly hone in on what that means for them.
When would you say a brand, a rebrand is necessary for the brand?
Yeah, I think that one of the signs or symptoms that I often hear is when companies start calling themselves a best kept secret in their industry. That to me is like a telltale sign because it means that what they have done is the hard work. They have the operations in order. They have something of value. They really feel strongly about the quality of what they're putting out, which is all awesome. And they should be proud of that. The next step is to like, well, why would you want to be a secret? Like, let's let that secret out and get it into the right hands. So that I think that if you feel like the back of the house is much stronger than the front of the house, then that becomes a really important and critical piece of making a leap. And I think that another one of the mistakes we see people make is to they get the back of the house really strong and then they get the front of the house to match the back. So they kind of say like, oh, we have to describe exactly who we are right now. Well, if you're a strong growing company, that's going to last you about 6 months. What you want is something that is going to be, you know, that you mentioned like the suit. It's got to be like the suit that your teenage son is going to be growing into in 6 months, you know, a year, that you don't want to be growing out of it by the time you finish paying for it. And so what we're often encouraging companies to do is to kind of like, you know, get the back of the house operations in order and then get a brand that almost like leapfrogs that and then shows like, what do you want to be in 3 years or 5 years, kind of what is the vision? Because what that does is it creates a really positive creative tension between what you're saying you're doing and what you're actually doing. It's still authentic and achievable. It's just a little bit of a stretch and it pulls the operations up to then match the brand. So it kind of like unlocks some extra growth potential in the company.
Yeah, it sounds like you're backfilling it for the vision you want to carry out, because one of my favorite quotes is from the hockey great Wayne Gretzky. He said, I always skate to where the puck's going to be, not where it is.
Exactly.
And I'm glad you made that point about the 6 months with the business, because it's like, here's who we are. It's like who you are today is what you were working on 6 to 12 to 2 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah, you nailed it. And I love that quote because I do think that that's what it's all about. And I think a good visionary in a company is usually at least thinking a couple years out, if not more. So then the challenge just becomes getting kind of what's in their head into something concrete, which in and of itself can be a challenge. But
yeah, and it's interesting because I know with myself personally, it's like, all right, If we could just get here, I'll never forget when I was launching the app for the show, the EA Interview Shine app, which you can get on Android and Apple. It was just like, I want it done. And then it was done. It's like, Well, that's over and done with. Now we need, if we just do, and even recently I looked back, I'm like, I will never forget how much work went into it, but it was so easy to update the, I added some bonus footage recently. And I was like, it literally took less than 5 minutes. And I'm like, thank God for the hard work I did years ago to make it easy work now. But it was a lot of hard work and it took like way longer than I thought it would. But it's like, it's done, now what? And now it's, let's work on this and let's work on this. There's always something if you're moving that forward, and the cumulative result is, these little tiny bits add up to, it's all the crap people don't want to do. It's good enough. It's good enough. When you have the attitude throughout the whole company and everything you do, the end net result is, it's good enough. So what would you say if someone's trying to skimp, on the brand identity, on the rebrand, and say, the logo's okay. We nailed the core. Let's redo the logo. Let's redo the site. It's good enough. Do you think you should just apply that to everything, or strategically go, it's good enough for now so we can move on to the next thing, but we'll keep tweaking it and kind of like ping pong back and forth to keep working on them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of value in not overworking something, not again, kind of letting perfection be the enemy of the good, so that it takes you so long to get something to market that by then the opportunity has passed. So I do think that having a sense of urgency and creating something that can be iterative is important. I think where I wouldn't skimp is in that like planning and upfront work and diagnostic, because if you don't know what problem you're trying to solve, or if you don't know where you're going, your route is going to look like a zigzag of like, oh, we went there, we turned around, we backtracked, and you're going to be driving way more miles than you need to be to get from point A to point B. I think that that's a lot different than kind of strategically plotting a route, but also having some way stations where we're going like, oh, well, let's just check out over here and see what opportunity is here. And oh, we get to, see this cool site along the way or something. All of that's adding value to what you're doing. But to me, there's just nothing more frustrating. And we work with small businesses, family-owned companies, and exactly what they don't have to waste is like time and money and people resources. It's like all of those are in such limited supply that it's like being very strategic about where and how you're expending capital is really, really important. So I think one of our company mantras internally is slow is smooth and smooth is fast. I think it's stolen directly from the Navy SEALs, and who better to steal something like that from? And that, but I think that is really true. It's like you kind of like slow down and ask the right questions and get the right information and plot the right route. And then on the back end, like with your app, then an update is really quick and smooth, because you've done all of that hard work of infrastructure planning. So it's a balancing act, and I think it's one of the things that frustrates companies is that it's a difficult balancing act to get right. So either they, underdo the planning and overdo the kind of iteration piece of it, which is frustrating, or they just stay in these like circular conversations with their leadership team and they never actually do anything. And that's frustrating. That's not helping anybody either. So it's just finding that sweet spot in between the two.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I don't think you should. I tell my clients the same thing, especially with business book publishing. If there's one area they want to be perfectionist in, it's, everything's got to be right. Everything's got to be right. But at the same point, if you take 5 years to get it done, number one, there's probably still going to be something you could improve. Just saying. But two, you miss those 4 years and 10 months of being to market, where all those people you can help who 99.99 aren't even going to notice it. And but at the same point, if it's, like, especially with a website, I'm going to just chime in on this one, because a website, it's like you can launch it and it's good. It's one of the easiest things to go back to and just like add to and fix and tweak. And if you're not, you're probably doing something wrong anyway, because things change in the web world. I know, if you don't know, Google occasionally makes some tweaks to things, especially after a decade. So That's one thing you can easily update. But with all this talk of the time, energy, and money that goes into it, how long would you say a rebrand should take?
I think our usually process takes about 9 months to go from sort of like the initial process of the discovery work and kind of, you know, honing in on what the mission is to actually being like hitting the ground running, execution, launch, all of those things. So I think that that is, you know, but I would also say that out of that 9 months, probably five of it is doing the like discovery, planning, research, assembling the right team, you know, really, really getting in the weeds of everything. And then the rest of it just starts really flying. And then okay. from there, like once you have the standards, once you have, you know, kind of the building blocks, then you can be so iterative and see what works, what's catching fire. And then you just kind of go back and rework the basics, because some of it is just, yeah, you just don't know until you get it out there and into the hands of people and see if your hypothesis is correct.
So would you say your process is more of a stage one, stage two, or do you have it chunked into like A, B, and C?
Yeah, it's kind of an ABC piece of it. So the beginning of the process, our process is called Solve for Why. The beginning of it is really all about the prioritization. So again, the companies that we work with are family-owned businesses. They're usually highly concentrated with maybe a few clients or customers or in one particular channel. And it's just like an unsustainable position to be in for the long term. But they also see about six different ways that they could grow or opportunities in the market. So basically we spend the first chunk of time really working with them to prioritize those opportunities and then to get really good data and information to help really fine tune the plan and to quantify what this is going to mean to the business in the long term. And so once we've done that prioritization piece, then it's really about alignment. And that's both an internal alignment of their team, because there's nothing worse than kind of, you know, pivoting your company or diversifying and then having a team that's like undermining everything that you're doing by talking to customers and going, I don't know why we're doing this. Yeah, I don't know. It's some idea that they got. I don't know if it's going to, you know, stick around. So you really need to get your people internally on board with why this is important, both to their future and to the future of the company, and also important to the customers and the people who they're serving. And then it's about kind of creating guardrails, you know, aligning the team around some guardrails for the process. What are we going to change? What are we not going to change? What's going to stay the same? And then it's about assembling the execution team. So I'm reading a book right now. It's called Who Not How. And I picked it up because I was like, ooh, like that is exactly, that is the question always. So a lot of the companies that we work with don't have any kind of, the people internally don't have expertise in, you know, search engine optimization or, you know, website development or app development or packaging or things like that, that they need to accomplish this pivot. And so basically what we do is we kind of match the team and the execution resources to what they're wanting to accomplish and to their kind of brand and culture so that they can answer that question of who, not how. And then the last step is just execution, just starting to get stuff done, you know, getting the plan together, getting the team, you know, off and running with marching orders and going from there. So
I love how you laid that out like that, because so many people I feel start with the execution, then halfway through go, should probably get a plan. What's next? There's no rhyme or reason, but I'll tell you what, good for them for starting, because there's the flip side. There's so many people who think about thinking of starting, they never actually start. However, yeah. If you don't have a plan, it's like at some point get one. And that's a great book recommendation for anyone listening. I'd recommend it. I actually had Dr. Benjamin Hardy on the show, and it's phenomenal. So thank you for mentioning that as well.
Yeah,
I want to ask you how you got into this, because you're giving a lot of great value here in what you should do, but why this? There's a lot of things you could choose from.
Yeah. So I mean, my story was a little bit of a winding one. I never wanted to start a business. I was an English major. I thought I was going to be a college professor, just read books all day. I was going down that path, and then was working at an advertising agency during the day. And basically I started liking that more than academia. So I bounced around to a few different marketing companies, and then finally met my business partners at one, and we decided to start Six Point. But I would say the first few years we had some kind of like just organic growth and success, and we grew. And then all of a sudden we just kind of like hit this plateau, and I was like, oh my gosh, like this is just not working the way it was working before. And so I started to do just like outreach, and I joined some CEO roundtable groups, and I joined a family business center. And I started realizing once I got in these rooms with these CEOs who were willing to be vulnerable about like, this is what we're dealing with. And I was like, oh, everybody has these problems. Like, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. I'm not terrible.
That's an easy fix.
Well, and I think what it reinforced to me was that they weren't easy problems to fix. And they're basically just the problems of running a business. Like, they don't go away. And one of my friends often says, like, success is having better problems. And so I think it reinforced to me that that was also the path, which I kind of liked as well. And then I also realized that the people around the table with me were the kind of business owners who I just really love being around. They're committed to their community. They're committed to their employees. They're trying to make a better life for their family. They're usually extremely passionate about whatever it is they do. And I was like, oh, these are my people. And also I realized that most of them were not leveraging brand strategy as part of their business. Like, they were so good at what they did, but they didn't really know the discipline of how these huge corporations were building brands. And they didn't realize that it was as accessible to them as it is to the big guys. And so that was where I was like, oh, well, I love these people and they don't really seem to understand how to use what I do. So maybe I could help them kind of like just bridge that gap and just teach them how to use brand to make their business more sustainable and kind of set it up for that next generation, give back to their communities, and just kind of like use it to be a positive force instead of this kind of like, I think a lot of them would look at brand as like, ooh, that's something that like the big guys do and we're not a big corporation, so we can't really do that. And instead just show them that it's like a tool that anybody can use.
Yeah, I'd say it's one of the best things that you can do over time, because I remember when I started doing it for my company, I remember starting off like, you know, as a typical small business and had some clients and this and that. And there was little things I was doing. My attention to detail, I just consider it common sense. It's like, why, if you're doing this, why wouldn't you do this one little extra thing? So it was just common sense for me, but I'll never forget I was at some event and someone I didn't know recognized me, and I was like, and I wasn't doing the show. I wasn't doing hardly anything I'm doing now. I was like, wow, this is kind of powerful. And, you know, so if anyone's on the fence, definitely get with Megan and start on it now, because it is an asset that will help you. And that's exactly what it is. It's an asset.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's the other thing too, is, you know, sometimes business owners will be like, okay, well, you know, I'm done. This was a nice ride, but the landscape's changed, like, or I'm falling out of love with it. And now I want to divest myself of this business, but I've invested a lot into it and I'm hoping to get something back out. And if they have not invested in brand at that point, when they want to get out, then there's often not as much left to sell, you know, a building.
You can't sell you if you're just,
you can't sell you, or you have to sell you and you become an indentured servant to your business for a number of years, which everybody I've talked to who's done that has been like, ugh, never, never again. And so I think also teaching companies how to package up their brand for a potential exit helps them build equity in their company in a way that benefits them in the long term. Maybe then they decide, oh, well, now I don't want to sell it. Well, it's still an asset that you have. You don't have to get rid of it. What you do to create a strong brand will serve you well, whether you keep the company or you sell the company. But if you do sell it, it helps you, you know, it brings you into like the multiplier potential of what you can get from that company. If you have a strong reputation that you can, you know, provide data to show like the market wants this, the market values the brand. We have a connection to our customers that is a barrier to entry for others to take over. It becomes so much more valuable.
Yeah. And I'm going to throw out the book, Built to Sell by John Warrilow. It's a phenomenal one. And to your point, you don't need to sell it, but when you have it positioned to built to sell, it's yeah. more desirable. It's easier to work and it just flows easier. And yeah. it's amazing yeah. when you realize, hey, we're doing it this way versus the other way. It's not just some conglomeration of just stuff. It's more yeah. strategic.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great book recommendation. And I always, you know, try to take the advice even with my own company of like build a company that you would never want to sell. And I think it helps you think differently about like, ooh, what would it take to make this thing one that I would just never want to let go of?
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. So I want to ask you about all the people you've been able to help. What's your biggest success story you could share with us?
That's a great question. I think one of my favorite ones has to be one of our earliest kind of beta tests for our Solve for Why program. Just because, especially right now with COVID, they're like particularly close to my heart because it's a restaurant chain, a family-owned restaurant mm. chain. When they came to us early on, it was just kind of that classic, like they knew that they had potential. The restaurant's called Hot Table. They sell these fabulous panini sandwiches and their logo was a coffee cup. And the owner, who's just a fabulous visionary and a great guy, came to me and he was like, I want Hot Table to equal panini. Like nobody else is doing this and we can get there and we can build something out of this. And so our team basically like went to work to put all of the pieces in place that they would need to build a brand to kind of equal his vision. And they went from 3 stores at the time, all kind of in a local area, to now being throughout New England. They're opening up their, I think like 8th or 9th store this year. They've got a couple more in the works. Like they've more than, you know, 3 times their size in, you know, the 4 or 5 years that we work together. And it's just been so fun to see that group grow. And then the other reason why I love them is that they also kind of like graduated from 6 Point. And I think that for some agencies, how long they hold on to a client is how they measure success. But for us, we want them to outgrow us. We want them to build out their own internal brand teams. We want to help them do that. Again, we're about like creating value in the organization. So I don't, you know, to me, it's like, well, I don't want companies to stay with us for 30 years. That means that they're not growing enough, that we haven't done our jobs. We want to like launch them onto bigger platforms. And I think Hot Table is a great example of that. They've become so focused in what they do. And it's just been fun to see them like dial in their offerings, dial in their brand, dial in the look and feel of their stores, leverage the brand on technology, which was huge, getting them through COVID strong, you know, looking at some of the apps and things that we put together for them before COVID hit. And then just being so proud when it was like, I knew that they were already set up to weather that storm and beyond. And I feel like it's a great story to show what some focus, like that kind of big vision, and then the willingness to do the hard work to just take the step-by-step approach to make that vision a reality. Like it works.
Well, I appreciate you for sharing that with Expert Authority World and me, because I love the inspiration of going, hey, you don't need to be here forever. And the attitude you have of saying, hey, I want you to graduate. I want you to do other stuff. I have the same attitude with the coaching program, because I've heard people, oh yeah, they've been with me for 10, 20 years or whatever. And it's like, unless you're one of the highest level whatevers, and you're only dealing people that are already at that high level, and there's some things to deal with the structure where it's like they're learning more from the people around them, like a mastermind, than mm-hmm. you. Okay, cool. But in most cases, for 99% of businesses, it's like you don't want them hanging around forever, because you want them to go, hey, we took you from here to here. Go fly. Go have fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And our whole business model and everything that we do is geared towards this specific life stage, this kind of taking a company from like a plateau or lack of diversification to that next level that they need to be. And once they've made that leap, like we just go back and do it again for another company. We don't have to keep doing it for them. Now they know how to do it. They can, you know, keep going. Maybe eventually if they get some other, you know, next level up opportunity, they come back around, but they, you know, it shouldn't be this kind of ongoing, you know, handcuffing somebody into a relationship that, so I think that that's, it is, you know, my favorite stories are the ones where it's like, no, like we launched them and they are good to go. And I can proudly be say like, we knew them when, you know, I knew them when their logo was a coffee cup and we helped them, you know, get to where they are. And it's a great feeling. It's like being that kind of like proud parent watching your kid, you know, go off and do great things. You don't want to do that for them. You
want to
just,
you want them to have the experience.
Exactly. That's part of like the pride is being like, yes, they can do it on their own. They don't need me anymore.
Well, I appreciate everything you've shared so far. I got one more question for you before we thank our sponsor and go to the Imperfect Action Round. And I want to ask you, do you know what it is?
Do I know what it is?
Yeah. We're talking about visionary in the future. What am I going to do next?
Ask me for a prediction.
You know what? I could. So this is the wheel of whatever.
Okay. Here we go.
Yellow or black?
Yellow.
Oh, good. Yellow. So let's talk about predictions. Where do you predict branding going over the next 10 years?
I mean, I think that in a way, the basics are going to stay the basics. It's still going to be about clarity, and it's going to be about focus, and it's going to be about consistency. But I do think that the brands that are going to succeed are going to be the ones that are willing to niche down and not try to be for everybody. But instead, I think that the best part about having, you know, the access to like digital marketing and digital platforms is that you can really truly find like the perfect people for your brand and just let everybody else go. And I think those are the brands that are going to create the strongest connections, the strongest value, and maintain the strongest relationships with their customers. And that's going to be kind of what builds value in brands moving forward.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing that. We're going to thank our sponsor and come back for the Imperfect Action Round. Titles, cover designs, and promotion, oh my. You are all excited to achieve your goal, maybe even dream, of becoming an author to serve more people with your business. But it's turning out to be a lot more than you expected, huh? I get it. I've done it numerous times personally. Visit getmybusinessbookpublished.com today to take the first step on making this process enjoyable, dare I even say fun, and most definitely profitable. Your business and audience depend on it. But you know what? Don't take my word for it. Take it from a few of my authors, like Lori.
And I went from having an idea and a possibility to actually getting my book published.
Or Catherine.
Thank you for making my mom number one best-selling author.
Or Mary Alice.
What he got done for me in 3 days regarding my book launch, unmanageable.
John Cody.
I've worked with Mario over the phone and online, and he's been very helpful in getting me where I needed to go with promoting my books.
Rocio.
There's no way in the world I would have been able to do this with somebody else. Again, I've attempted it in the past. It didn't serve me. As a matter of fact, I ended up more frustrated than anything. So this has been a very seamless process.
Adele.
If you're looking for an amazing business coach, I highly recommend Mario Ficini.
Or Bill Benner.
I can't make a higher recommendation than to work with Mario Ficini. He has been great for me, and right now I won't work with anybody else except for Mario.
Hey, their words, not mine. Visit getmybusinessbookpublished.com today to take the first step and I look forward to hearing your transformation as our next video success story. Once again, that's getmybusinessbookpublished.com. And we are back with the Imperfect Action Round. Megan, are you ready to take imperfect action?
Of course, always.
I got three questions for you, 60-second or less answers. And the first one is, what is the fastest path to the cash?
It is focus. Getting super focused on who you serve and why you're valuable to them.
Excellent. Number two, what is the biggest problem you see your prospects making and the fastest way for them to fix it?
The biggest issue that they have is that they are afraid of loss. And so they are unwilling to kind of let the past go or make somebody mad. And they forget that the fastest way for them to pull people closer to them is to start talking to those people who they're afraid of losing.
Excellent. Number three, what is the best way to maximize customer lifetime value?
I would say it's almost the same answer of like, talk to them. I think companies are too often assuming that they know what their customers want and need from them, or that their customers are happy with them or, you know, good to go and that their lives haven't changed. And, so companies need to be talking to their customers all the time.
Very good. Now we threw a couple of them out there earlier, but what are some books you'd recommend to Expert Authority World?
One of my favorites is John Cotter's Leading Change. It is a great book about how to create massive change in your company and the steps that you need to do and the order that you need to do them in. And then the other one that I love is Smarter, Faster, Better. And it's just, that's both a fun read and has tons of great tips on how to make your team more productive and how to kind of use the way teams work to, yeah, just get smarter, faster, better within your own company.
Very good. Appreciate those. Where would you like people to learn more about you?
Sure. People can learn more at sixpointcreative.com. So that's SIXPOINT. creative.com. And we also set up a landing page for your listeners at /expert authority.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate for everything you've shared, and this has been a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right, Expert Authority World. We have another great episode here today. I'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day. God bless. You're already the expert, but have you transformed your expertise into a tangible asset that will generate qualified leads while increasing profit for you 24/7? And if so, how well are you promoting it? With the Expert Authority Effect publishing method, it's easier and more profitable than ever. Visit getmybusinessbookpublished.com today and take the first step to publish and promote your nonfiction lead and profit-generating business book in 8 weeks. Visit getmybusinessbookpublished.com and take the first step knowing it will be your very best and you're leaving it all on the field. Oh yeah, and it's also free. Once again, that's getmybusinessbookpublished.com. Hey, thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you got a lot out of it. I know I sure did. If you haven't done so already, I invite you to subscribe to the show. And also be sure to check out eainterviews.com for complete show notes, the full interview video experience, links to the resources we mentioned, and more. Have a blessed day, and I'll see you tomorrow.